pleasant evening to you. I'm Grant Stancini. Welcome to another edition of the Better Health Radio Show. Last week, you had a presentation of Dr. Grandison, and this week we have a different presenter to you. I'll let her introduce herself to you in a second or two, but let me tell you this much. We want to give a big welcome to Kia Lewis, Dr. Kia Lewis. She will be your presenter of the Better Health Radio Show for the next couple of weeks, and we want to welcome her to the Starcom family. So without further ado, let me go right over and welcome her. Dr. Lewis, you with us, please?
Hi, good evening, Gregson.
Yes,
thank
ma'am.
You for your warm welcome. And I want to extend that warm welcome to our listeners here on the Better Health Radio Show, a show in which we aim to raise public awareness of common health issues that affect all of us. As you would have said, I am Dr. Kia Lewis, and it is my absolute pleasure to be your host this evening. We are very much looking forward to an engaging and interactive session, and I take this opportunity to remind you that you can contact us with your questions and comments, either by calling us at 434-1790, or you can send your WhatsApp messages to 266-4862. Again, the number to call, 434-1790, or you can WhatsApp us at 266-4862. Now, we know this month we have focused quite a bit on breast cancer awareness. I walked through Sheraton Mall just yesterday and I saw all the beautiful pink displays. And we've been looking a lot at the issue of breast cancer. And so this evening, we want to address this publicly here and give you, the public, the opportunity to call in and ask your questions. And we are very blessed to have a distinguished guest with us, Dr. Dale Springer. And I'm going to tell you a little bit about us before I formally introduce him. Dr. Dale Springer is a consultant general and breast surgeon at the Queen Elizabeth Hospital. He's also a lecturer in general surgery at the University of the West Indies, CAFIL. He is the medical director of Innovative Surgery Center, which he established in 2019 with a primary focus to advance and provide high quality, evidence-based, patient-centered care to surgical patients, especially those with breast conditions in Barbados and the wider Caribbean. Dr. Springer joined the Department of Surgery at the Queen Elizabeth Hospital, where he pursued his Doctor of Medicine in General Surgery. He completed this in 2014. After this, he continued working in the Department of Surgery at the Queen Elizabeth Hospital as a senior registrar. Dr. Springer is very passionate about advancing the treatment of patients with breast cancer and other breast conditions, and this led him to pursue his fellowship. In 2018, he successfully completed a one-year clinical fellowship in breast and endocrine surgery at the first affiliated hospital of Chongqing Medical University in Chongqing, China, with special focus on oncoplastic breast surgery, breast conserving surgery, and reconstructive breast surgery. He is also a fellow and an active member of the Caribbean College of Surgeons. His research interests include locally advanced breast cancer, triple negative breast cancer, and cancer distress. Without any further ado, I wish to welcome you, Dr. Dale Springer, to the Better Health Program.
Thank you very much, Dr. Lewis. Good evening, all. Good evening, Grayson. Good evening to the listening audience. Welcome. Pleasure to be here this afternoon.
Good. So good to have you. And so we talk a lot about breast cancer, but there's still a lot of misconceptions out there. And so we wanted to start at the basics. We want you, Dr. Springer, can you tell us a basic layman's definition of cancer and therefore breast cancer?
Okay, so cancer refers to a situation where you have cells dividing in a disorganized and a uncontrolled way. And so it's not the early division of cells that we would get, right? So this disorganized division of cells or breakdown of cells is what we refer to as cancer. And breast cancer refers to when this condition affects cells in the breasts. Yes, it normally would manifest as a lump. Most commonly, you would feel a lump, a hard lump in the breast.
Yes. And Dr. Springer, we know that commonly we associate breast cancer with women, but we're also aware that men can have breast cancer as well. Yes?
That is most definitely true. Majority of persons diagnosed with breast cancer will be women. The incidence of breast cancer is about 12.5 5% or one in eight women, right? But for every 100 women who are diagnosed with breast cancer, you will have one man who will be diagnosed with breast cancer. So even though it seems to be predominantly a disease of women, it's also important for men as well.
Right. So that's to let our male listeners know that this program is definitely for you, because not only can it affect your family members and your significant others, but it can affect you as well. So stay tuned with us. Now, we talk a lot about breast cancer. We know that it can be a devastating diagnosis, and we are always so excited when we have survivors. But Dr. Springer, can you give us a picture into what the breast cancer statistics are like? What is the gravity of this situation locally and perhaps even globally?
So I will start, globally is perhaps the most commonly diagnosed cancer worldwide. Yes, and it's second in mortality just after lung worldwide. So it's one of the most common cancers that you will see. And the situation in Barbados is no different. And it's the most commonly diagnosed cancer in women in Barbados, and it's the second most commonly diagnosed cancer in Barbados, the most common being prostate cancer. In 2020, there were 189 new cases that were reported, new cases of breast cancer that were reported, and that accounted for 16.4% of all cancer cases diagnosed in Barbados. Yes, and this was a little dip from the last period we had in 2015, but we think because of the COVID pandemic and so forth that we have come here for the dip. So it's been constantly up there between number one and two, the top two causes of cancer in Barbados. So it's definitely a significant concern in terms of cancers occurring.
Yep, I would say Barbados. Definitely staggering and significant, and that's why we have to keep having these types of discussions. And so that brings us to a very important question. We talk about breast cancers. I think listeners would want to know, if it's so common, then what are the risk factors? What is leading to the increase or the high incidence of breast cancers?
Yes, there are risk factors. When we look at risk factors, we normally think of things that we can modify and then things that we cannot modify or that we cannot change. Yes. So in terms of the non-modifiable ones, we think about age. As you get older, the risk for breast cancer increases. Certainly in the fifth decade or in the fifth person in the 50s, there is definitely, you see, an increase in cases, but patients who are younger can also have diagnosis of breast cancer. As we said before, gender is more common in women. It's also common in persons of the risk factors, of ethnicity is also a common risk factor. More so white women, but it's also after white women, black women, as majority of the population, we will see as a significant risk factor. And majority of persons under 40 who are affected by breast cancer tend to be black women. This is the literature from the United States. So it's definitely a significant concern for us. In terms of risk factors that are modifiable, things that you can change, things such as having your first child, you found that you having a child over the age of 35 confers a slightly increased risk of breast cancer. But that is not to encourage persons, everyone, to go and have children, but having children over 35 is a risk factor. Right. Also, not having children at all is also found to increase your risk of breast cancer. Other things that we can modify, such as alcohol use, smoking, and having a sedentary lifestyle, not exercising very much, these are also found to contribute to breast cancer. And not only talk about the risk factors, things that predispose you to breast cancer, but things that are protective are things such as breastfeeding. If you have a live birth that is protective, also having adequate weight, and then also having a diet that is low in fat and high in fiber and high in fruits and vegetables is protective for breast cancer. So these are some of the main risk factors. We'll discuss the genetic ones a little later on.
Good. So I wanted to go back to the point you raised about Black women developing breast cancer at a younger age. I think that that's a point that we have to drive home, because then it speaks to detection earlier for Black women. What would you say about that in terms of screening? what would be your recommendations for Black women in our population?
Yes, definitely screening is an important concept that we have to look at. And those figures, I can't say those statistics are for the U.S., but our population is majority Black. So I think it's of extreme relevance to us in terms of screening. Just to say, screening is where we try to detect a condition in a person who is asymptomatic. That means they don't have any symptoms at all. So the person is well, but we are checking to see if they have a condition. So that is screening. And it's usually a process. So we normally think about the screening test, which is most commonly the mammogram, but it's usually a process where you would sit with your provider, normally your general practitioner or your breast surgeon, and they will look at your risk factors for breast cancer, your family history, your social history, et cetera. Social history meaning in terms of your exercise, you smoke, alcohol, these kind of things, and then come up with a regime for you, because you have to know that screening has advantages and there's some disadvantages. So we're looking in terms of looking at screening, I think we should be starting screening at the age of 45 for sure in our population, even though there's some evidence that we should even look at earlier at the age of 40 to have that discussion with the patients and if they wish to, when they understand the risk and benefits, that they can start screening from 40. And at that age, once the patients of average risk, then the screening would be a mammogram. Yes, for mammogram. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We have certain persons who are higher risk of breast cancer because of genetics. They have close family members. If you have primary family members diagnosed, such as a sibling, a parent, or a brother or a sister, or if they have a gene that predisposes them to breast cancer, and the recommendation is actually to start screening even earlier than 40 in those patients. And that is usually at 25, and that's with the MRI. And at 30, you would add your mammogram to that. It's a more intense screening protocol for these patients who are at high risk of breast cancer.
Yes. And that makes perfect sense to me. And I think when you raise the whole issue of family history, Dr. Brandison made an excellent point. I think it was either last week or the program before that, about sharing your family history. And I want to take the opportunity to reiterate that. Oftentimes when it comes to things like cancers, we are very secretive. So patients will sit in the office and you will ask them, you know, how did this person pass? Or do you know if this person had any illnesses within their family members? And they say, well, I know this person passed, but I don't know what it was. Or I know they had cancer, but I don't know what it was. And I'm not getting into the family part or the family business. But suffice to say, if you have a serious diagnosis like breast cancer, it's really important that perhaps you share with those who are closest to you family-wise, so that they are aware that they are now at increased risk and that the physician who is screening, who's organizing screening for them, will be able to appropriately guide them. Do you agree with this, Dr. Springer?
Yes, I totally agree with you, Dr. Lewis. It's very important that we know the family history. And when we see patients, we actually take the time to ask it, because it can actually give us clues to when to start screening, and even for breast cancer, and even for other conditions that may have a genetic component. So yes. I know it may be a little bit like being the Barbadian culture, some of us tend to be a little bit secretive, but it could be very important.
Yes, very important indeed. So there's another question I wanted to ask. We've heard about fibrocystic breast disease, and we also have women who have larger breasts that are very dense. In terms of the protocols for screening for them, because I know some of them have concerns, some of them might have heard that the mammogram might not detect everything. What is your take? Is there any other tests that you might recommend or that their GP might bring up with them to recommend for screening for breast cancer?
Yes, the problem with persons, we start with the ones with dense breasts. They do have the concern that some small lesions or calcifications are not seen well on the mammogram. Yes. So you always start, even before we go to the test, with any clinical examination to make sure there's no obvious abnormalities. But in terms of screening for dense breasts, it's still the best test is the mammogram. But if they have any high risk factors apart from the dense breast, then you would want to consider the MRI of the breast. For persons with fibrocystic changes, which are quite common in young patients, if they reach the age of 35, 40, you can use the mammogram for them for their screening. The fibrocystic breast does not affect the visualization of the breast tissue as much as the denser breast. So there's no change in the screening protocols or the screening plans for those patients with fibrocystic changes.
Right. So the ladies who might have larger and more dense breasts, you don't have to worry. You are well taken care of. You know, your doctor will know what to do. All right. As we're talking about screening, you mentioned the examination by physicians or doctors. But how important is it, for example, to do a breast self-examination? What are your thoughts on this, Dr. Springer?
Yes, breast self-examination, it's very interesting in literature. Even though some literature speaks against it, I still think it's a very important part of women's health, and it actually empowers women. So it's very important for women to examine their breasts. And the main thing is to get to know what is normal for your breasts. So if there is any change, any abnormality, you can always right away go to your general practitioner or your breast surgeon and have it checked out. So it's very important for women to be aware of their breasts and to know what is normal for them. So I would recommend women, even men, examine their breasts. Yes, for the women, we see it at least at a minimum once every month, normally after the menstrual cycle, if they're still having their menstrual cycle, about 5 days or so afterwards, because this is when the breasts are less tender and they're checking for any changes in the contour or shape of the breasts. If there's any redness, any change in the position of the nipple, so as you see one nipple is retracted, whereas that was not normally so, any rashes, then also when you want to, like you may see lumps, if it's not something you can see when you feel, you want to check all of the breasts for any lumps and also in the armpit as well for any lumps. So if you have any of these findings, you can go to your general practitioner early to have it evaluated. Even if you're not sure, you have a doubt, I always tell patients to get it checked out.
I agree, having a baseline, knowing what your breast normally feels like is extremely important. You can literally save your life that way. So yes, I think that is.
Yes, we actually have some patients who can detect lumps even before we as physicians can feel them because they know their breasts so well. So I think it's very empowering for women to actually be able to be aware of their breasts and to know these things.
Right. And it doesn't hurt. It doesn't cost anything. So, you know, there's really nothing to lose, so to speak, from doing that screening. At this time, I believe that we have a caller. So we are going to pause to allow some interaction from the public.
Yes.
Good evening, caller.
Peace be on to each and everyone. Good evening. Very good program. Cancer is an enemy to my family. And I had an MRI thing year before, and I don't really use deodorant. I use baking soda and coconut oil. Now under my arm was clear. Now it's seen on my left, and that is the breast that I find strange. But each time I go and get it, because they have fibrocystic breasts, each time I go to get the mammogram, they are telling me everything is all right. But I find now under my arm dark spots, and I never had dark spots under my arm. So I want to know if there's something wrong, or I am in my early 60s, or if that is just natural. Hello?
Hi, good evening, I'm hearing you. You will have to be seen by your doctor, see if it is something that is wrong or if it's normal for you. It's very hard to say on the radio, but I think you're doing the right things, getting checked, going to have your mammograms and so forth.
Yes, so well, actually, every year. But right. They are telling me that they ain't saying nothing, but I know people said that the doctor was telling them they haven't seen anything, and when they decided to, you know, when they went further, there was something, but they're just telling me they ain't seeing nothing, but they're just telling me because my breast is lumpy, that is it. But I don't know. I ain't really get any pain, but you know, sometimes if I touch anything, it feels strange to me. But it's not painful. But my family are cancerous family. I lose a lot of my loved ones up to yesterday.
Yeah.
So
you're discussing two things. One, the lumps in your breast, lumpy breast you're describing, and then the dark spots. Mm. Which may or may not be totally related. Yeah, so have you shown the dark spots to your doctor?
No, I haven't gone to him yet, but to say I would show him to see if it is if it is anything. But persons were telling me that because they're using the baking soda, So I don't know.
But I'm not sure if being a sewer causing you have direct spots. Maybe you may have some reaction to it because you can have reactions to things that you put on your skin. So that's why I think it's best to actually have to let your doctor see it. And then he could be able to direct you because it's hard to make a diagnosis before actually seeing something like this.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. But if you're being checked and you're having the breast examinations and you're checking your breasts yourself and you know your breasts are always lumpy and that's normal for you, that's okay. And you're doing the appropriate screening test if it's a mammogram and that's kind of about normal, that is good as well. The dark spots and the change in deodorant, it have to be discussed individually with your doctor because it's not something that is very common.
Okay.
But it's certainly not a common way that breast cancer would present to have dark spots under the arm.
Okay, all right. Thank you very much.
I still have it checked. Thank you.
I will. I have to see my doctor otherwise, so I will show him.
Right.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you very much for calling.
Thank you so much, caller, and thank you, Dr. Springer, for addressing those issues. We talked about, the caller highlighted something very important, and those are the signs that we should be looking for. And I know, Dr. Springer, that you mentioned some of those signs. You would have talked about lumps in the breast. We hear a lot about that. Skin changes. What can we look for as it relates to changes in the skin? What should be concerning for us, Dr. Springer?
Yeah, so any changes in the breast skin, such as thickening of the skin, sometimes you can have dimpling of the skin or a depression of the skin, which is new. That is also concerning, or redness of the skin. If you have any rash of the skin of the breast or the nipple or the areola, which is the dark part that surrounds the nipple, especially if it looks like what we would call eczema, that is also concerning.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And we are going to have a discussion about the types of cancers, but there's a particular type of breast cancer I want to bring up because we're talking so much about the skin, and that is inflammatory breast cancer. And that can be a little bit more difficult for persons to detect. Can you tell us a little bit about inflammatory breast cancer?
Right. So inflammatory breast cancer is a special type of breast cancer. This is when you have breast cancer with skin involvement. And the skin involvement can be edema. And we get something called prodiorange. And that's just a fancy word to say the breast looks like the skin of an orange. You can see the little dimples in the skin, like you will see in the skin of an orange. Or you can have a redness of the skin. Yes. And inflammatory breast cancer, you have the skin involvement. It affects a minimum of at least a third of the breast, and it has to be present for less than 6 months. Yes, and the thing about inflammatory breast cancer, it tends to be a little more aggressive type of cancer, and it tends to spread early to the lymph nodes or even distant sites.
Mm-hmm.
Thing is, it's sometimes misdiagnosed because when it's seen by some clinicians or some doctors, it's thought to be an infection of the skin, like a cellulitis, infection of the skin of the breast, or a mastitis, which is infection of the breast tissue, and not have cancer. So the key is, if you suspect this here, that you have a mastitis or a cellulitis or infection or inflammation in the skin, and you're treating it, and you're not seeing the improvement that you would expect within a week or so, then you rethink your diagnosis. Refer the patient for imaging, and that would usually show evidence to confirm the diagnosis of inflammatory breast cancer. What you would not want is to have a long period of treatment for inflammatory skin conditions, like the cellulitis, when it's actually an underlying cancer.
Right. And I think that was important to highlight because most people are just looking for a lump, right? And if there's no lump there, they're thinking, well, it must be just a rash and they're going on with the treatment. And I believe in patients being their own advocates. So if for some reason there is something inside of you that says this diagnosis does not quite sit well with me, this thing is not resolving, definitely go back to the doctor or even seek a second opinion if you feel the need to do so. Because it's important, any skin changes that we said in the breast, that you get them checked. Go ahead, Dr. Springer.
No, I'm just saying, yes, I agree with you totally. I'm definitely a fan of second opinions because at the end of the day, you want patients to be comfortable with the treatment that they're having. If they're not comfortable, they're always in their right to have another opinion.
I agree. And it's
definitely support
approach.
That.
Yes.
All right, Dr. Lewis, let me just interrupt you here for a second. I have a call here. I'm quite sure they want to engage you. So let's say a special good evening to our caller. You're still with us?
Yes, I'm still here.
The doctors are listening to you. Go right ahead, please.
Yes.
Hi, good evening.
Yes. Up to what age do you stop getting a mammogram? Is there a particular age?
Thank you very much. That's a very interesting question. Yes. I will answer it in two ways. What the studies and the guidelines says up to the age of 75, that after 75, you can consider stopping. Yes? But some persons and some institutions will say, once you are feeling well and there's a life expectancy of more than 10 years, that you can continue to do your mammogram. And they will suggest you can switch from doing it every year to doing it every 2 years. So there's no need to stop at 75 if you are well and you have a life expectancy more than 10 years. And you know you have a very high life expectancy here.
Okay. Oh, because my mother, she's in her 70s. She's 74. So she was wondering if she should get one, you know? So that's what
it's up to her, but definitely there's nothing to say she should stop once she's in good health.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Well, thank you.
Yeah. You're welcome. Thank you for calling.
Thank you, too.
Excellent question, caller.
Let me just interrupt you again, if you don't mind, please.
Sure.
There's another caller here. Do you wish to engage?
Yes.
Yes, please. Right.
Yes, good evening. Welcome to the Better Health Radio Show.
Yes, good evening, folks. Good program. Hello to the doctors there.
Hi, good evening.
I would like to ask one question. What percentage of men fully recover from prostate cancer? And what causes prostate cancer?
This is a question that we would normally be happy to answer, but this evening we are focusing very much on breast cancer. We only have limited time, and we don't want to take the focus off of breast cancer.
Okay.
But we have followed up with a program about prostate cancer, where we can answer all of your questions and concerns.
Yeah, okay, that's all right. Thank you.
But thank you so much for calling.
Thanks a lot.
All right, it's Dr. Lewis this evening. Dr. Keel Lewis and Dr. Dale Springer is our guest on the Better Health Radio Show. And we thank you so much for your calls. Dr. Lewis, back over to you, please.
Yes, I wanted to go back to talk about the signs that we're talking about in terms of breast cancer. I know that some people say cancer isn't painful, so if you have a pain in the breast, you shouldn't be concerned. But Dr. Sprite, I want you to address it. What is your opinion, and given your experience, what is your opinion with regards to this statement?
Well, as most things in medicine, we should never say never. Yes. Yeah. Majority of times, if you have pain in the breast, it is not cancer. Yes, it's usually some type of inflammation, a mastitis of some sort, maybe fibrocystic changes. But the important thing is some cancers can be painful. For example, inflammatory breast cancer we just spoke about. So the key thing is if you have a concern to your breast, if you're having pain and it's not going away, to get it checked. And then you can have the diagnosis. But you don't want to say because majority of cancers are not painful. It is not that. The important is to have it evaluated, then you would know. Majority of times it will not be. But then in a minority, it can be. You do not want to be in the minority. So always have it checked that you have a concern for your breast.
And I think that this is important, not just for the public, but for us as doctors. I remember having a patient who I had a similar situation with a painful lump. And I reassured her, I said, it's unlikely to be cancer because of the pain. But at the end of the day, we went on to do the necessary investigation and it very much was cancer. And so these are things. It is not to scare you, but to make you aware that if there's a change in your breast that you are not comfortable with, you should very much seek medical attention. Yes. I want then to move on. We've talked a lot about the signs that you should be looking for, but I want to know when you do see these signs, you see your doctor, how do we go about making that diagnosis of breast cancer?
Right. So you see the doctor normally, as we said, we always start with history to find out exactly what is going on, what's the family history, the social history. History is very important. History gives you the diagnosis over 95% of the time when you see the patient. But you also examine the patient. And we're looking for some of the same things that the patient is looking for when they do the examination. Changes in the skin, we feel to see if we can feel a lump in the breast. We check in the armpit or the axilla to see if we see any lymph nodes. We check also in the area above the clavicle to feel for lymph nodes. We'll check the abdomen to feel the liver to see if there's any signs of spread. But if these things are present or observed, if you are thinking of a breast lump or a breast condition, we'll order imaging. For patients over 35, it's usually going to be a mammogram. And for patients under 35, it is going to be an ultrasound. In some situations, we will order both the mammogram and the ultrasound as well. And we're looking for any suspicious findings, masses, architectural distortions, etc. I would suggest that there is something sinister or something worrying in the breast. And if we do see that, even though we can suggest and we can think that this is a diagnosis based on the investigations, we always have to do a biopsy to make the diagnosis. And the biopsy test simply involves giving some local anesthetic to numb the area and using a special needle to take a little bit of tissue from the area that is suspicious or the area that has the lump and send it to the lab where we look at it under the microscope. And that is how we make the diagnosis, because some things can look like cancer, but then it's not cancer. I must say here, I have some patients who are very wary of biopsying these things, especially if we are taking cancer, because they think that the biopsy causes the cancer mm-hmm. to spread or to grow faster. Mm-hmm. But there is no evidence that we have that shows that. Biopsy actually gives a lot of useful information to treat you, and it has minimal side effects. And it definitely does not cause the cancer to spread or grow any faster.
Right. That's important, because if we suspect you have cancer, we need to know what is going on. We need to be able to confirm. And that brings us to a discussion about the types of cancer, because oftentimes we lump breast cancer into one, but there are different types of breast cancer. And based on the type you have, it can affect the outcome and the treatment. So Dr. Spreer, can you tell us a little bit about the different types of breast cancer? We touched on inflammatory breast cancer, but I want you to tell us a little bit about the others.
Yeah, so inflammatory is just the manifestation of it. But in terms of the types of breast cancer, you have two main types. One is called invasive ductal carcinoma, and the other one is known as invasive lobular carcinoma. Yeah, so these are the main types. And that's what the biopsy would normally tell us. It's one and two of these types. The ducts basically arise from the ducts of the breast, and the lobular one arises from the lobule. But once we get that diagnosis, we have to go further, reduce special testing. A big word called immunohistochemistry, but it just means to find out what special type of cancer is or what receptors the breast cancer has. So the receptors are proteins on the surface of the cancer cells. And when these receptors come into contact with the chemicals in the body, it can cause the cancer to grow. So the three receptors we normally check for are the estrogen receptor, the progesterone receptor, and something called the HER2 receptor. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So if you have these receptors, you are called triple positive. You have all three of these receptors, you are triple positive. If you have none of these receptors, you are triple negative. If you just have the HER2 receptor, you are HER2 positive. And if you have the hormone receptors, but the HER2 is negative, you're hormone receptor positive. So this is how we subclassify breast cancer. And based on the subclassification, it tells us what treatment we should give. And it also helps prognosticate or tell us what we expect the patient will respond to and somewhat the outcomes will be. So it's very important to know exactly what type of cancer. And inflammatory breast cancer is just a clinical way the cancer manifests. Mm-hmm. And it can be any one of these, even though it tends to be either triple negative or HER2 positive cancer.
Right. So Dr. Springer, what I want you to do is just to repeat the types that we talked about, because it was a lot of information. We said we have triple negative. So I just want you to
Right. So we have the receptors. We have the three receptors on the cancer cell. And these are stimulated by the substances in the blood when they reach the cell. Right. So you have the estrogen receptor. So you have estrogen, the female hormone in the blood. That stimulates the estrogen receptor. You have progesterone. That is the progesterone receptor. Progesterone stimulates that. And we have a next receptor called the HER2. It is stimulated by other factors in the blood. So those are the three main receptors. The estrogen and the progesterone receptors go together, and those are called hormone receptors. Right? So together, you have hormone receptor. You can have hormone receptor positive cancer, which is HER2 negative. But the HER2 receptor is not present, but the hormone receptors are present. Or you can have the hormone receptors being absent, but the HER2 receptor being present, so it's HER2 positive cancer. You can have all the receptors absent, which is called a triple negative cancer. Or you can have all the three receptors that we just mentioned being present, which is called a triple positive cancer.
Right. And like we said, that's going to affect the treatment and the outcomes. Because some cancers are therefore going to be sensitive to treatments with hormonal type treatments, and other cancers are not. And this information is important. I'll tell you why. Sometimes you might be talking to other cancer survivors, breast cancer survivors, and they might be saying, but my doctor did this particular type of treatment. Why isn't your doctor doing X, Y, Z? right? Or even relatives from overseas who might be concerned, and they might be saying, but the doctor, as far as I read or I've heard, I heard from Susie that had cancer that this is what they treated her with. Why are you being treated with something else? But the understanding that we have different types of breast cancer is extremely important because it helps us to know that there are different ways of treating it. Yes?
Exactly. And each patient is different. Each cancer is different.
Yes. Very important point. So at this point, we're going to pause for another call. Good evening, listener.
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
Hey, good evening.
Good evening. Good evening. How are you?
That's very good. Thank you. Go right ahead, sir. The doctors can hear you, please.
Okay. I didn't hear the program from the very beginning. I can remember hearing a regular caller to the station talking about her on her arm being discolored. Now, reading and doing a little research, there are deodorants that contain something named aluminum that I have read can cause cancer. So I would suggest to people when they ban any deodorants to make sure they're aluminum free. On a general note now, the pesticides that we are using to kill the insects are also killing us, because don't care how long the crops are, for want of a better word, allowed to fallow, for want of a better word, there are still going to be some sort of pesticide on those crops. And I would suggest that those who have a little land, plant their own vegetables, with the insects, get some, you get some, and we all survive. That is one of the areas where a lot of cancers are caused by the foods that we eat. I don't know if you have anything to say about what you have said.
Dr. Springer?
Yes, I would just say the idea of having aluminum in deodorant causing cancers. It's not really common. It's not a common risk factor for breast cancer. Yes? It's not really recognized to be a common risk factor for breast cancer.
Okay. Yeah, I'm only telling you what I research and what I read. Like, in the states, certain parts of the states, certain products, they always, like smoking, they tell you that smoking is dangerous to the health, so it's up to you. And my research showed me that they tell you this aluminum can cause cancer, whether it's breast or whatever, any cancer is deadly. And if you could avoid it, in my simple mind, I feel you should, whether it's breast, kidney, whatever. Because as I just said, all cancers are killers. Thank you.
All right, sir. Thank you so much for your call. Doc, before you move on, Dr. Lewis and Dr. Springer, I've got a query here. It says, can the doctors please speak about breast cancer in men? I remember at the top of the show you mentioned that as well. So they're asking you here to speak about the breast cancer in men, and they're saying that in the Sunday Sun they highlighted a man with breast cancer. What is the incidence of this in men? So if you can address that, I'm quite sure this person here will be very happy.
Yes, thank you for that question. So the incidence in women is about 12.5%. And the incidence in men is 100th of that. So it's about 0.125%. So basically, to put it simply, is that for every 100 women, we'll have one man with breast cancer. A lot of these signs are very similar in men, such as they may feel a lump, they may see a rash to the breast, or they have some skin changes, dimpling of the skin, or they may have lumps in the armpit. They will have a lot of these similar symptoms that women will have. But the local stage of the cancer when it's diagnosed in men is sometimes a little higher, a little more advanced in men, because men tend to have less breast tissue than women. Yes, but the symptoms are more or less the same. The signs are the same, and the diagnosis is the same. We can do mammograms and ultrasound in men. We will do biopsies, and a lot of the treatments are the same for male breast cancer. So it's not only a disease of women, even though it predominantly affects women, it definitely affects men, and men should also be aware of this.
All right, Dr. Lewis, go ahead, please.
Yes, thank you so much, Carla, for that question. I think that that is a wealth of information. And I want to thank the male callers who are engaging us this evening. We're very happy to have you on a topic like breast cancer, you know, asking these very pressing and burning questions.
Well, before you move on, I'm sorry again for interrupting you, but they've heeded your call. They've heeded your call, and somebody wants to speak to you again. Good evening.
Good evening, Gregston.
Hi. Go ahead.
Good evening, Gregston, and good evening to the goodly doctors.
Yes, they can hear you. Go ahead, please.
Yeah. First of all, we the listeners, we want to thank you guys every Sunday for giving up your time to educate us.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's a pleasure.
Yes. And we want to thank you, too, the listeners. We learn so much from these programs. But, Doc, I would like to ask, this question is for Dr. Springer. If a man is diagnosed with breast cancer, would his treatment be the same as a woman who has been diagnosed with breast cancer?
Yes. It will be the same. We want to find out what type of cancer it is. We want to know what stage it is. And then the treatments are the same in terms of surgery, chemotherapy, radiotherapy. The general categories of treatment will be the same applied for a male as to a female.
Okay, can you tell me what the difference between radiotherapy and chemotherapy?
Okay, thank you. That's an excellent question. So chemotherapy, so both of them are therapies used to treat cancer. Let me first start by saying that, put that into context. But chemotherapy usually involves giving medication that acts throughout the whole body, right? And we call it systemic therapy. So it's either intravenous medication, which is through the veins, or by a tablet, something you take by the mouth. Right? It goes throughout the whole body. Yes, that is the chemotherapy. Whereas for radiotherapy, this is using x-rays. So most of us know x-rays, like when we go to get a chest x-ray, or if you're unfortunate to break our hand and the doctors want to see exactly how the fracture looks, they will take x-rays. So the radiotherapy is just like these x-rays, but it's a series of these x-rays concentrated on a particular area of the body. There's a larger amount of x-rays and it's concentrated, and these x-rays can also kill cancer cells.
Okay, the other question I have for you, Doc, is this. If a lady is diagnosed with stage 4 breast cancer, what is the prognosis?
Right, let me see first of all, stage 4 breast cancer, just for all the listeners, means that the cancer has spread outside of the breast and outside of the armpit or the axilla. So it has gone to someplace distant. It's usually the lungs, the liver, it can go to the brain, the bone. These are the most common sites, right? So that's stage 4. Yes, and people think of stage 4 as a death sentence. But because of the advance in treatment now for breast cancer, even though it is not curable, it is certainly treatable. Yes? And we have some persons, and it is what we call heterogeneous. We have different types of people who are stage 4, different categories of people. So people who are well and doing their everyday activities, and it is certainly treatable. Yeah, so the prognosis survival is about 25% at 5 years. I think I have to ask the question specifically, but it's hard to say exactly which patient, because we have some patients who are surviving even longer than that because of the advancement in the medications that we have to treat, especially the chemotherapy and the other hormonal therapies, etc.
No, I was saying that I heard a lady recently on the radio saying that she was diagnosed with stage 4 breast cancer, and that was 30 or almost 30 years ago, and she's still living quite happily. So I was just curious because I know someone with stage 4 breast cancer, and she has this fluid that's coming from the lymph nodes under the arm, and she seems quite happy. She ain't worried about anything. She goes for chemo. And I was just curious about how you obviously can't answer the question. But I was just concerned about when you get to that stage, what's the prognosis? But
it varies from patient to patient, but I like the fact you said she's living quite happily, you know, because we encourage patients still to see the positive and be positive. Because another thing when you're treating and you're fighting breast cancer, it's a diagnosis that nobody wants, but you got to be positive. And it shows that having a positive attitude does help.
Yes, she definitely has a positive attitude, and I talk with her every day, and I like, and you know, the thing about her and I, we having our conversations is that when I speak with her, I never mention to her anything about her illness. Yeah, we just have normal conversations about life in general, and sometimes we talk politics, but we never have a conversation about breast cancer, because I figure to remind her of her condition would not be good for her, so I don't mention it.
Fair enough. That's very considerate of you. But there are some patients who are quite comfortable talking about their condition, and we actually like to have those patients because they are advocates for others, advocates for themselves, and it helps to get patients who are newly diagnosed to be a little more comfortable with the diagnosis. And since they can answer questions from a patient perspective that we as doctors, we can answer theoretically, but we can't answer. So I think that is good to have patients who are willing to share
their condition and their
diagnosis.
If she starts to talk anything about it, I probably would entertain her in discussing it. But for me to bring it up first, I would never do that.
All right, caller.
Fair enough.
All right.
Understood.
Thank you kindly for your contribution. As usual, my friend, you have a wonderful evening.
Okay, Doc.
One or two people here trying to get through, and I want to engage them before time expires on us. All right, thank you kindly. Let's go to this one now, Doc, and see what we have here. Good evening.
Good evening. Hello?
Hi, good evening.
Hi.
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes,
caller, you're on the air.
I would like you two to give me honest answers. Saying that your family are prevalent to cancer, and you hysterectomy, there's nothing wrong with the womb, but maybe later in your age, because I find that people in the 80s and 90s and things ending up with cancer, and you decide, well, your being age done, is it okay that you can take it out? The other question I want to ask too, can you, nothing might not be wrong with your breast, but you think maybe later down in your ears too that happen, can you get them take off too? Or there have to be something wrong with them for you to get them taken off?
Okay, let me start with the last question, I will confess. The first question is a bit out of my remit, the hysterectomy.
Okay.
Yes, but I will speak to you on the breast, the taking off the breast, or what we call a mastectomy. Mm-hmm. So if you're doing that and there's nothing wrong with the breast, that's what we will call prophylactic mastectomy.
Mm-hmm.
It's normally to prevent, and when we say prophylactic, it's normally to prevent cancer.
Right.
Yes. Mm-hmm. We don't usually recommend that unless the patient has a proven genetic predisposition.
Okay. Cancer.
So we do the genetic testing and we see they have certain genes. Mm-hmm. Most commonly the BRCA1 gene or the BRCA2 gene or mm-hmm. PALB2 and the other genes,
mm-hmm.
right? You see that you can consider a prophylactic surgery in that setting, right?
So you can do it. You can get it done, or there will have to be something for you to get do, or you could just go and check these things, and then if it is like that, then get the surgery.
Right. So it may be recommended. It's most usually recommended if you have this genetic predisposition. But it is not
in the family,
yes, but also in the individual patient, we will do the testing of the patient. So we'll take blood or saliva from the patient and send it to the lab, and it will tell us if the patient has this gene. So when the patient has these genes, they have a 5% chance of developing breast cancer. Sometimes some estimates put them even higher, even as high as 80%. So if you have these genes and you have this risk, the options are, in that case, the prophylactic surgery or the preventative surgery to take off the breasts, or you then have to go into enhanced surveillance. We will have to have mammograms and MRIs at 6-monthly intervals, alternating.
So you will have to take medication then for the rest of your life or anything like that?
If you do the preventative surgery, you know.
Okay.
Right? But we don't normally do take off both breasts for a patient who doesn't have this genetic predisposition or who doesn't have cancer, just because they have a risk of cancer because they have breasts. Because the risk is 1 in 8. So the chance is 7 in 8 that they wouldn't get breast cancer. So that's not a surgery that we would do or advocate, that we wouldn't just get the breast taken off just to prevent cancer. It's only so
where can you where can you get this test done? Hello?
Hey, Jeanette. Mm-hmm.
Where can you get this test done?
Right, so you can call back and Grayston will give you the information.
Okay. Okay.
We cannot all advertise right. Sir Henry.
All right, okay.
That would not be appropriate. But he will have the information for you when you call back.
All right, thank you.
You're welcome. Okay. Have a good evening. Thanks, Gail. All right, Doc, we've got another query here for you before you move on. This says, good evening, all. How effective is thermography in picking up cancer? I have been told and subsequently read that it is able to detect it earlier than a mammogram. What say you, Doc?
Well, I'm definitely not a supporter of thermography. There are no significant studies that support this modality for diagnosing breast cancer. As I understand it, I have not studied in any great detail, but it has to do with looking at changes in temperature of the breasts and so forth to see areas that could be suspicious, yes? But we don't advocate that. What we would advocate is the mammogram or the ultrasound as age appropriate and the MRI breast in high-risk patients. But thermography has not been shown by any validated studies to be appropriate for screening for breast cancer or has any role in treating. It is not in any of the major guidelines, not in the US, the European, the UK guidelines, nor in the Chinese guidelines.
All right. Yes. Dr. Lewis?
Yes, I want to say that it's very important, that last question. It's very important when you get a diagnosis of breast cancer that you be guided by your medical professionals. Because we use evidence-based approaches to treating. So you will see different things on the internet or you will hear different things from persons. But at the end of the day, you really do need to, we need to provide care that has been well-researched and shown to work well for our patients. So I just want to put in a plug there for really walking the journey with a medical professional that you trust who can advise the best treatment for you. Now, Dr. Springer, one of our callers, the gentleman before who called in and thanked us, I want to thank him and all of our callers because you really do help to guide the program. And one of the things that we did not look at as yet was the stages of breast cancer. So he talked about stage 4 breast cancer. But what I want you to ask you, Dr. Springer, there are several stages. I wanted to know if you could go through the stages of breast cancer and then looking at those stages, what is the surgical treatment that is recommended based on the stages?
Right. So there are basically 5 stages of breast cancer. If you call me, stage 0 is really in pre-invasive cancer or DCS. So some people count that as one stage. And then the other stages are 1 to 4. As you go from 1 to 4, yes, the increase usually use means there is when you use this system, it's a more extensive disease, with 4 being the most extensive because you have spread to organs outside of the breast on under the arms. So we use a system called the TNM, where we look at the size of the tumor, the involvement of the lymph nodes, and then the spread to any distant organs, which is the M. So stage 1 is usually confined to breasts. Stage 1 and 2 and stage 3 basically would be nodal involvement. That was the teaching before, but because we're looking at some different parameters now, like the type of cancer that we discussed, the hormone receptors, mm-hmm. et cetera, and also the grade, it's not as clear cut as that, but just in general, as you go from 1 to 4, there is a increase in the spread of the cancer. Is less localized to the breast and spread is more distant. In terms of the treatment options, I will start in terms of surgery. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the surgical options are usually related to the breast and the armpit or the axilla, and you have breast conserving surgery, which is just to remove the lump with an area of normal tissue around it, or you can have a mastectomy. And then you have some checking of the lymph nodes in the armpit, axillary surgery, either a sentinel lymph node biopsy or axillary dissection. Yes, and he called it a little bit of bilateral mastectomy, but I would say that there is no strong indication for bilateral mastectomy before a genetic predisposition to breast cancer, because a lot of patients will say if they're diagnosed with cancer, pick off both breasts the same time.
Right.
It is not strictly necessary, and there is no survival benefit. The other thing I would say is that if you have a breast conserving surgery, which is the lumpectomy and radiation therapy, the survival is the same as if you have a mastectomy. Mm-hmm. Yes, the overall survival is the same as if you have a mastectomy. But our patients tend to go towards mastectomy to see as a more complete treatment, fair enough, but we have to give the patient that information right up front. The other thing I would say is that when we talk about mastectomy, in the appropriate patients, we should be thinking about some kind of reconstruction.
Okay.
Yeah. We either think about implants or using patient's tissue to remediate a breast mount if that is something that they would like. So those are the surgical options.
I wanted to tell us a little bit more about the reconstruction, simply because I think a lot of people know about mastectomy, which is total removal of the breast. And people know about the lumpectomy, which is where instead of having the entire breast removed, you get the part that is affected removed. And you're able to conserve the breast, so to speak. But in terms of the mastectomy, we know that your breasts sometimes are very important to women in terms of their femininity. And I do not think that a lot of women here might know that it is possible here in Barbados. We have seen it globally, certainly with cases like Angelina Jolie, for example, high profile celebrity cases where they would have had mastectomy and then had the breast reconstructed. But tell us a little bit more about the local situation in terms of availability of this service. It's no option.
Yeah, breast reconstruction is definitely available locally. Mm-hmm. Yes. And the options, as I said, is either the use of an implant, which can be placed beneath the muscle. Often we'll have to put in what we call an expander first to create the space. Right. And then we'll change it out to an implant. Yes. Or we can use the patient's tissue, like tissue from the tummy, the abdomen, what we call a tram flap, to move that tissue from the abdomen to remake her breasts. For patients who don't have such sizable breasts, we can use tissue from the back, what we call the latissimus dorsi flap, to come around and bring that around to the front as well to make a flap. And for moderate size, we can use these flaps, the latissimus dorsi and the implants as well to remake the breasts for our women. So it's definitely an option, but we have to look, take in consideration the stage of the cancer, what other treatments will be required, et cetera, where we are considering these things. Yes. Okay. We even have mastectomies where we can preserve the nipple. When you take a mastectomy, the nipple is lost, but we can preserve the nipple. It's called a nipple sparing mastectomy, and that can be complying with any of those reconstructive techniques, either the implant or some type of flap. So it's important, definitely for younger patients and some older patients as well, to discuss what their aims or objectives of surgery are, and then we can make a plan to suit them.
Yes, I like that. So you have the option now, and of course it will be guided by your medical professional and the stage you're at and so forth. Now we only have a few minutes left in the program, and the last thing I want to discuss, Dr. Springer, we talked about breast cancer extensively, but I like to empower persons. And I want to ask a question to you. What are the key things that people can do maybe to reduce their risk of breast cancer? We talked about the risk factors, but I do not think that we can drive home enough the importance of a healthy lifestyle in perhaps reducing the risk of developing breast cancer. Dr. Spring, what are your comments there?
Yeah, I definitely support that healthy lifestyle. So I think eliminating smoking, for sure, monitoring your alcohol intake, also mm-hmm. making sure you're doing adequate exercise, and then diet is very important. Yes, you want to have a diet that is high in fruit and vegetables and fiber, and perhaps a bit lower in the processed refined sugars and the red meat as well. Yes, and this will help with other conditions, even though not only breast cancer, but high blood pressure, diabetes, high cholesterol, I think it all helps, because we want to treat, not only look at breast cancer, but look at the patient on a whole. So doing these things can empower the patient. Also the, yes.
Mm-hmm. No, you go ahead. I was agreeing with you.
Yes. I was also saying the reproductive factors in terms of when you choose your health, have your family and so forth, are also other things that we can modify, but obviously those are social factors, mm-hmm. and the social situation would come first and not just do them because of reducing risk.
Yes. So I just want to reiterate the importance of a healthy lifestyle, not just in reducing your risk of breast cancer, but like Dr. Springer as a whole, it helps with your entire physical health. It helps with your mental health. And should you develop breast cancer or any type of cancer, you want your body to be in the best possible shape to be able to fight. All right. So I want to encourage our listeners this evening to, you know, live a healthy lifestyle. Dr. Springer, I will give you the final few words as we close the program. Any points that you would like to leave with our audience to drive home?
Yeah, thank you again for having me, Dr. Lewis and Ray Sterling. I really enjoyed being here. The main thing I would say is that for women and men to be aware of your breasts, check them regularly. And if you have any concerns whatsoever, get it checked with your doctor, and also keep up to date with your screening investigations. And for women, that will be your mammograms. And we tend to put these things off, but it's important to get them checked. And this condition is not a death sentence anymore. It is totally and eminently treatable here in Barbados. I know you're a bit scared, but it is treatable. So please get it checked so we can help you if you need the help. That would be my final word, I think, to sum up everything I've said this evening.
Thank you so much, Dr. Springer, and thanks so much to our listeners this evening. Gregson, over to you.
Yes, please. Thank you kindly both. This evening, you had a presentation from Dr. Kia Lewis. She was the host this evening, and her guest this evening was Dr. Dale Springer. Of course, last week you had Dr. Adana Grandison, and prior to that you had Dr. Renee Boyce. Now, what's going to happen is, as far as I'm aware, Dr. Kia Lewis will come back next week. Is that correct, Dr. Lewis?
Yes, please.
Right, she'll be back. But before you go today, just alert our listeners to your associations, any affiliations you have with any outside associations. I should have asked you that earlier. Could you help us there for 2 seconds?
So I am the Assistant General Secretary of the Barbados Association of Medical Practitioners. So that's my main role here. I'm also the chairperson of the Childhood Obesity Prevention Coalition and a volunteer with the Heart and Stroke Foundation Barbados.
Right. Okay. So now the listeners are a little bit more aware of you. So that's Dr. Kia Lewis. She will be your host next week. This evening she had Dr. Dale Spring, like I said before. We look forward to what she's bringing us next weekend. So until then, Dr. Lewis and Dr. Springer, thank you kindly and have a wonderful evening.
Thank you, you too.
So much.
All right, take care.
Bye.